Welcome to The Conservative's Guide to American Politics. My name is Ed Bejarano, and I am an otherwise happy-go-lucky conservative who enjoys life in North Idaho with his wife and two golden retrievers. For all intents and purposes, I keep to myself and figure folks should live and let live. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But I am frustrated watching the news. All I really tune in to see is the weather and maybe some local interest stories, but most of what they show me is their political bias and socialistic tendencies. The American media is no longer neutral. Instead, they use their megaphone to influence political power. The ideals of America have been hijacked by people who otherwise dislike or hate American ideology. I started this podcast as my way to fight back from my little slice of America. Call it a rallying cry for other common sense conservatives to arm themselves against the onslaught of negativity. It is time the America-hating progressives hear from the silent majority. It is time for conservatives to stand up and be heard. Welcome to Conservative's Guide. Thank you for tuning in. Today we're going to talk with a man who served 13 years in the U.S. Navy. Joe Collins was born in California in South Central L.A. He left California to serve in the military, including a wartime tour overseas. Then returned home to the 43rd District of California. That, by the way, is Maxine Waters' district. In 2020, Joe ran for Congress against Maxine and lost the race by more than 2-to-1 ratio. By all accounts, a stunning defeat. A defeat that would make you or I question why we were in politics to begin with. But I digress. Today's episode is about a man, sure. But it's also about a small district of American voters in what should be the most pristine slice of Mother Earth. During the War for Independence, General Cornwallis said of the American colonists, quote, "They are nothing but poor farmers with little skill and no heart." Now, 239 years later, I wonder if the general's quote is coming to fruition. Give me a moment to point to the 43rd District to support this question. Maxine Waters was first elected to Congress in the 43rd District in 2003. In 2019, PublicSchoolReview.com reported a math proficiency rate for Inglewood School District at just 19% and a reading proficiency of just 30%. That's compared to 40% and 51%, respectfully, for the entire state. Even the statewide scores are embarrassingly low, but here's the kicker. The graduation rate for Inglewood School District, ready? It's 87%. If just 19% of the students can do math, why are 87% being graduated? I would say that is a question for Maxine, but the 43rd District chose Maxine and her failed policies more to 2-to-1 last time. Talk about doing the same thing over and over, but expecting different results. Was Cornwallis right? In April of 2020, when the government was well extended past the 15 days to slow the spread, people took to the streets to protest shutdowns. Maxine Waters was very critical of those protests. Of course, she was the one who famously called on her supporters to, quote, "get in the face of the Trump cabinet if seen in public." Cause a ruckus, she said. On April 20th, 2020, Mark Zuckerberg took a stand. Facebook banned pages who were supportive of the protests against government lockdowns. Folks, I dare not draw any parallels to what happened in America back in the 1770s, but Americans then were frustrated by government overreach. They were protesting the British oppression and overtaxation that they felt only served to support the total lack of control over spending. But the people capitulated and sided with the British with hopes of keeping the peace. The Stamp Act, Townshend Act, and dozens of other acts chipped away at the American spirit. when the tea tax of 1773 came about, the ultimate protest happened and America's war for independence was underway. The rest, as we say, is history, because Cornwallis was proven wrong in the most embarrassing of ways as he was sent packing back across the Atlantic. Is 2022 the year of the modern Boston Tea Party? Was January 6th really the insurrection that the likes of Maxine Waters bemoans? Or is the actions of Mark Zuckerberg and the big tech giants more likely to bring about America's next civil war? America's top generals are saying January 6th was the first shot in the second civil war. Today I have Joe Collins on, who is again running against Maxine Waters to help overturn the House of Representatives and bring sanity and leadership back to his home district. Even in a district where the number of Republicans is so small that to think victory is possible would be considered insane. But my guest today knows firsthand of the American spirit, just like our founding fathers who faced insurmountable odds as they went toe-to-toe with the largest, most well-equipped army in the history of man. Joe Collins will once again step on the political battleground against one of our nation's most corrupt politicians. Joe, thank you for taking time to talk with me today and the listeners of Conservative's Guide.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, I am an old California boy myself. I was born in San Jose, raised in Santa Cruz County, spent many a years down there going to Southern California, visiting family and having fun. And to see what has happened to that great state is appalling. Let's start with, who is Joe Collins?
Well, who is Joe Collins? That's a really interesting question. I am a South LA native, U.S. Navy veteran, 13 and a half years. I like to fish. I like riding horses. I like shooting guns. And I like traveling. It's a little bit about myself. And I guess we'll figure out who the rest of Joe Collins is through this podcast.
Sounds good. So why are you running for Congress?
Well, I'm running for Congress. It's a long story. It's a very long story. Let me try to shorten it up. I've got out the military to get involved in politics. I've already taken an oath to protect and defend this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And right now, we have a domestic enemy problem. We have people who are sitting in legislative and executive positions who are not really representing the people. And, you know, last time I checked, the representative of the community is supposed to represent the people in its entirety, not just one interest of the political party or not just one interest of the people who identify with the same political category as you. For myself, when I got out of the military, I was homeless and I was living at the I was living on the streets, Rancho Palos Verdes Lighthouse, and I was going to Maxine Waters' office every other day trying to get her to help me with my VA benefits, and to with no avail. I didn't get any response. I even took her flowers and everything, and so that's when I decided, you know, I'm going to run against this lady, because if she treated me like this, as a U.S. Navy veteran, especially a person who says, I fight for all black people, but I'm black, but because I'm Republican, you don't want to have anything to do with me, I figure she treated a lot of people like this, regardless of their political party perspective. And I think that's wrong. When you look across the nation, a lot of politicians are doing that. A lot of times you hear these people say, well, the people want this, the people want that. And I want everybody to think, well, how would they know if they're not there with the people?
That is such a good point. First off, thank you for your service. It's because of men like you that we still have a country. The challenges that you had coming home, it just embarrasses me. The fact that we are not taking care of our veterans is appalling. Put aside the politics. I might understand why a political activist like Maxine Waters would not want to help a constituent from an opposing party. I think it's a stupid idea, but I could at least understand from a radical like her. But the fact that the city of LA didn't welcome you back with open arms and help you get your VA benefits going, I'm so sorry. I speak on behalf of the American people. very sorry for the way you were treated when you got home.
Oh, it's not just me. It's a lot of people who I got out of the military with. It's a lot of people who were in the military who are the same age, same the served time as me, and going through the same thing. So it's not just a me thing, but this is a problem that goes unnoticed. A lot of times when we speak out about it, people are like, oh, well, you just need medication, or you just need, you know, to be quiet and just say the system is good. When we know it's broken, we know that the politicians pander behind the fact that we're going to do something, we're going to fight for this, and we're going to fix this and never get fixed. They do it for votes. They don't do it because they actually care about the things that we go through on a regular basis.
And that's just disgusting. I mean, 22 veterans a day commit suicide. This is an epidemic that's far worse than what the COVID pandemic is giving us. And these are people who raised their hands and swore an oath to protect and defend our nation. So I'm with you on that. We need to first and foremost look after our veterans. And good on you. When you were going to your congresswoman and asking for help and she was treating you as such, to go ahead and throw your hat in the ring and run against her, if for no other reason than to make sure people knew what kind of person she was. Tell us a little bit about how that first race went.
Oh my gosh, the first race was rough. It was extremely rough. I mean, you talk about a person who has been in the military for 13 and a half years and decides to hop into Congress, hop in a race with no experience, because he want to do the right thing for his community and for his country. I mean, you have all types of people out there who take advantage of Black Republicans because they see that potential to raise a lot of money. And a lot of consultants make a lot of money from the ignorance of people who get involved in politics, first year runners and everything. So we were faced with that throughout the primary. After we made it through the primaries and I got a little bit more experience under my belt, we put together an extremely solid team. And then we were faced with Maxine Waters, right? The thug of politicians. And I don't use that candidly. And I don't even use it. I don't even mean that as a euphemism. I mean, she is literally a thug of politics. She had people come after us. I've been threatened on multiple occasions. She sent gang members to our events with guns, tried to intimidate us. Our office was vandalized. I mean, you name it, we probably went through it within this election, you know. But all in all, I would say it was a blessing. And the reason why was because we also ran the most aggressive campaign against Maxine Waters. Mind you, whenever we started running in this race, I didn't run or hop in this race because of notoriety or to raise a lot of money or anything like that or be famous. I ran in this race specifically to represent my community in a manner that they deserve to be represented. Now, we only had 18,000 Republicans whenever I started in this race, and we were able to register over 50,000 Republicans in the 43rd Congressional District. And so now we have a little bit over 80,000 Republicans who live in the 43rd District, which is a good thing. And, you know, we just worked extremely hard. You know, we were blessed with the ability to raise money. And so I went across the country and helped other candidates raise money. You know, we were blessed with the ability to give over 300,000 pounds of food away. We gave over 13,000 job fairs. We did over 30,000 backpacks and school supplies giveaways. I mean, like, we were extremely instrumental in the community. Me as a person running for Congress, which I wasn't even sitting in office, but I was able to work with the mayor on legislation to improve the community, improve the relationship between the law enforcement and the community, and just be a positive influence to that community and actually show people this is the type of legislator you deserve, not the person who panders and says, you know what, you have a problem, we're going to work on it. You know, not that person who talks, but the person who gets down and dirty in a suit or in blue jeans and works hand in hand with the people and politicians who actually care about the community but are afraid of the people.
That's fantastic. And you're right. We are hungry for a leader like you, somebody who is going to actually do it, somebody who is not, I mean, even after such a stunning victory, I ran for office, I ran for city council, and I got beat by almost a 2-to-1 ratio. And I was so embarrassed, I went and hid. But you didn't do that. You got strength from the defeat. And then you went and you did for people. Good on you. Bravo. But you're still running against a thug. You're still running against the most corrupt politician in Washington, D.C. What's going to be different this next time?
Well, I'll tell you this. It's three important things that people need to know. The first thing that people need to know is I might be running in against a thug, but that thug has a newfound respect for somebody who is going to take it to us. I mean, we drug Maxine Waters up and down South Central Los Angeles. We made Maxine Waters say my name and put my picture and my name on every piece of her campaign material that she was handing out. Now, that's respect. The second thing is, you know, we may not have had the outcome that we were looking for, but we know what was happening in these elections. And we still have a lawsuit for election integrity still in the courts till this day. So people don't want to talk about it because we're in liberal California. I mean, we whipped Maxine's behind, you know, and the only way that she was able to win was by picking up ballots. I mean, she got 190,000 votes, and she has never, ever, ever been that close. She has never got that many votes ever in her whole entire, you know, years in Congress. But we still have an election integrity lawsuit. The county of Los Angeles came out and said, well, we didn't verify signatures. We didn't verify addresses, and we didn't verify the voter registration status because Maxine has been in there for, you know, she's been in there for so long and she was going to win anyway. You know, and this is the type of corruption that we're fighting on a regular basis. So, you know, the election outcome may not have looked as if it was in our favor, but those people know who I am and they know I'm not playing any games. And the third thing is this, you know, we ran the most aggressive campaign within the United States. We took our district from a D+54 to a D+21, which is remarkable. Nobody has ever done. I think President Trump was probably the only person who has done that in an election year when he was running for president of the United States. So he had the whole entire country versus me with a single district. And we didn't get the support that we needed or that we deserved from the California Republican Party. We didn't get the support that we needed or deserved from the NRCC or the National Republican Party. You know, we got our support from people across the United States who got our message, who believed in what we were fighting for, and who still believed in what we were fighting for. You know, we may not have won the battle, but the war isn't over yet. This is just one battle of many wars, and we're going to win this war. You know, we have to keep people believing us. We're still doing our food drives. We're still heavily involved in the community. I have people coming to me telling me every single day, we wish we had voted for you. And I said, you know what? Sometimes you got to learn your lesson before you can do better next time. You know, and I think that's what we're going through in the 43rd district. I think that's what America is going through right now with Joe Biden as the president of the United States.
Boy, that is such a smart point, because coming in 2022 here, it's absolutely no doubt that the Democrats are going to take a shellacking. They deserve the shellacking. They've done wrong by America. Maxine has done wrong by the 43rd district for years, over two decades. And she deserves to be taken out of Congress because if for no other reason than just her threat against the people who were serving in the president's cabinet. To go on TV and call on her constituents to get in the face and rough up the cabinet for the president of the United States, this is a despicable woman. But enough about her. Let's talk about the future. So 2022 rolls around, November's done, and you are declared the victor. What are your top two issues you want to address when you get to Washington, D.C.?
Well, the top two issues that I want to address, and I think about this a lot. I think about this on a regular basis, every day, all day. The first issue that I want to address is the poverty in these inner cities, these Democrat-ran cities. Why is there so much poverty? You know, as a U.S. Navy veteran, I've traveled across the United States. I've traveled across the world, and for United States to be the richest, the wealthiest, the most prosperous country, the country where people would literally break United States laws and codes just to get here to have an opportunity. Why do we have so much poverty within our inner cities? That's the first issue that I want to address. The second issue that I would address is international relations. Now, when we talk about international relations, my biggest thing when it comes to international relations is United States influence, United States spending in regards to our allies internationally. You know, why are we giving so much money to other countries who do not benefit the United States? You know, and why are we supporting countries who won't support themselves? You know, you look at the G11, the G20 summit, all of these different summits that they come up with where these world leaders, they want to meet and they want to talk about certain things and they want to look good in front of the cameras and take pictures, their fancy suits, but they don't take care of their own countries. They look for the United States to be that support system. And if I can give a depiction of what it looks like to me, it looks like the situation between daddy and mama in a family. You know, mama's going to give you what you want. And that's what the United States has been. United States has been mama. Gimme, gimme, gimme. United States, give, give, give. And then you have daddy. Daddy's going to give you what you need. He's not going to give you what you want. And so I think the United States has to transition between being mommy, who gives all of these other countries everything that they want, without holding them accountable for the things that they're supposed to be doing for their own constituents, for their own people, for their own country, and transition into daddy. And we're going to give you what you need, and we're going to hold you accountable. So those are my top two.
Fantastic two. Those are great. Let's talk about the first one. What are your ideas for addressing poverty in the inner cities?
That's an interesting question, because there's not a one-size-fits-all solution to this. I mean, you talk about decades and decades and decades of conditioning for poverty. And I think one thing we have to look at is the spending. You know, how is the United States spending on different states, and how are the states spending on different counties, you know, based on whatever qualifications that they have for that spending? I know when I look back the COVID relief budget, states are getting hundreds of billions of dollars. But where is that money going? Because I see no improvement. You know, you look at the school system, billions and billions of dollars of federal aid is coming through from the United States government to each individual state, but our schools are still failing tremendously. I know you talked about the education for Inglewood. Now, we look at South Los Angeles, you know, we have 43% of the people living 28% below poverty. You know, the graduation rate is 87%. You know, the college graduation rate is 27%. You know, so where are all these people going? Why is our education failing? Even students that are graduating college cannot get into a profitable or meaningful career because they think they have education, but they don't have the skills, and they don't have the skills for the occupation that they'll be. They don't have the experience. You know, when they're not teaching these kids how to be adults. You know, they're not teaching them the basics. They pulled trade out of school. So now if you're not going to college, you don't even have a trade to bounce back on, you know? And if you want to address poverty, you have to address education. And after you address the education, you have to address the quality of jobs that are getting put into every single community. Now, I know in the 43rd district, we have an abundance of fast food restaurants and supermarkets and stores. But when's the last time you heard somebody saying, you know what, I've been working at Walmart for 30 years and I'm going to retire from Walmart after making $12 to $15 an hour for 30 years?
It right. Doesn't happen. No.
And it doesn't. So we need our pipe fitters. We need our plumbers. We need our engineers. We need people who go into trade, our auto mechanics, our transportation community. We need these things. Infrastructure, our truckers, our construction, man. We need these things, but they systematically pulled these out of schools. They pulled them out of communities. They almost pulled them out of the United States.
Wow. Now, I know that the homelessness crisis in California is among the worst in the country. Seems like there's more homeless people every day, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. What would a Congressman Collins do to fix that situation?
I think a Congressman Collins would have to be that person that would step up and say, you know what, we're going to hold California legislators responsible for the ill job that they're doing within this state. I mean, we can attribute homelessness to a number of things. And again, it's not a one size fits all. You look at the cost of living that increases on a regular basis. You look at the amount of taxes that the politicians are putting on Californians. I mean, taxes double and triple every single year. We just had a double in taxes coming up in this next election cycle. And you have to start asking yourself, well, if California is supposed to have a surplus, hundreds of billions of dollars surplus, where is this money going? Why are we constantly getting taxed? You know, and then you look at where California is spending the money. $1 billion on defective masks from China. Hundreds of millions of dollars for medical care for illegal immigrants. Hundreds of millions of dollars for housing and food benefits for illegal immigrants. Creating too much restriction and regulation around development in California. So when any developer does get the ability or permission to develop in California, those costs doesn't get handed down to the people who are actually living. And then we have to look at the mental health aspect, right? Because according to Cal Matters, on any given day, we have between 155 to 160,000 people that are sleeping on the streets. 27% of these people suffer from some type of mental illness. And now these 27% who suffer from mental illness, we don't have mental health facilities open within our communities, within our state. But the state has granted them the ability to do drugs on our streets by providing them needles and by providing them drugs, alcohol, and benefits so they can continue to be homeless on our streets.
And it does. It gets worse. I mean, you cannot walk down the street in Southern California without stepping over needles, stepping over defecation and trash galore. I mean, it is just an absolute disaster down there.
It is. It's sad. But
it is, because it's a beautiful state. Being born and raised in California, it was amazing. I grew up in Northern California, up in the Silicon Valley. But again, you don't grow up in California and not go to LA every year. I was down there all the time, and it was so beautiful. I mean, granted, this was a long time ago, but still, it shouldn't have been something that was let to rot. And I think that's what California has done, is it's let its streets rot. It's let its people down. So something else that's popped up, and I asked these general questions of folks running for Congress so that the listeners, the voters, can get an idea of what kind of man you are, what kind of politician you will be. So let's talk about January 6th. So many in the mainstream media, and almost every Democrat, said the protests on January 6th was an insurrection. American generals are calling January 6th a move towards civil war. What are your thoughts on January 6th?
Well, I think the American generals and the people who say that January 6th was an insurrection are morons. And the reason why I say that is because if you're a general or, you know, top brass in the military, and you think that January 6th is the start of a revolt in the military, that shows that you're extremely out of touch with the people who are under your command. And I think that those are the people who need to be replaced. Now, the January 6th being an insurrection, how people are seeing it on mainstream media, these leftist media organizations, these are people who are really out of touch also, because I think it was the New York Post and Washington Times did a focus group, right? They took Democrats and they took Republicans, and they asked them, what are your opinions on January 6th? Surprisingly, the majority of the people who were Democrats said January 6th was not an insurrection. January 6th was the people letting their voice be heard about the improprieties from their legislators to them. You know, and a lot of Democrats said that the people who vote Democrat said that it was a long time coming. They're sick of the federal government. The government always talks about they represent the people, but the people are literally not being represented. And you can tell by the climate of our country, and you could tell by the quality of living of our country. I mean, when you ask me, is January 6th an insurrection? I'm going to say absolutely not. And I'm going to say it every single time. And here's the reason why. And I think different from a lot of people. But I think January 6th was extremely necessary because I think the politicians who sit in Congress, who sit in the office of the president of the United States, they need to be afraid of the people. They need to be just as afraid of the people as the people are to walk outside their houses in liberal states where violence is surging, where crime is surging, where prisoners are getting let out on a regular basis, where crime is not being punished. These politicians, they need to be just as afraid of us as we are, as the policies that they're allowing to go on in our cities on a regular basis. So it was extremely necessary.
Well, Jefferson was the one who said that the Tree of Liberty must be cleansed from time to time. And while that is a radical thought, and I'm not suggesting that an insurrection or a civil war take place, Joe, I think you're dead on right. The politicians, they've really had it a little too easy here of late. And we've got millions of Americans who are paying the price from the disconnected attitudes our politicians in D.C. have. I'd like to go back to education and talk about an issue that I hope you will face and find out how you stand on school choice.
School choice, I think, is a wonderful thing. And I think that school choice needs to be a policy across the country. And a reason why I say that is, let's take South L.A., for example. The schools in South L.A. are failing, right? And we could take Beverly Hills, for example. Schools in Beverly Hills are succeeding. Now, the legislators who live in South L.A. has not been held accountable or done what is needed to be done in order to ensure that the schools in South L.A. are improving. That's not the people's problem. That's the legislators' problem. The people absolutely should hold them accountable. But if they don't know how, they don't know how to hold the politicians accountable. Now, you look at Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills school system is doing extremely well. Extremely well. Students are graduating ahead of their class. They're graduating proficient in reading and math. And it's the ideal school where anybody from inner city would want to send their child because everybody wants their child to succeed. I have a personal story about it. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I went to Horace Mann Middle School. Now, when I graduated Horace Mann Middle School, because I lived in South Central and 104th in Normandy, I was supposed to go to Crenshaw or Washington High School. Now, you know, not a knock against the high school, but they're not necessarily proficient in reading or math. So my mother decided that I should not go to those schools. I should go to King Drew Medical Magnet School, where they are proficient and where you can get a career coming out of high school. And so this was a choice that my mother made. And of course, you know, she had to do some things that may or may not be illegal in order to get me into that school, but I'm a better man for it today. And so I think that if you have a school system that's failing, the students shouldn't be punished for a failing school system. The students and those parents should have the right and the privilege to send their students to the best schools possible. And I think that is a right. I think that school choice is a right, especially if you want to continue to make adults that are going to be the future of the United States.
Oh, and that's a great point. You're right. We need to produce the greatest employees the future has ever seen. And that's only going to happen if we give them the greatest education that they can possibly get. So the next topic is a very, very sensitive one. Texas recently passed the heartbeat law. And the state I live in, Idaho, they have a similar law, but it has a trigger event on it. It's requiring a law from another appellate court or higher to uphold such a law, like what's taking place in Texas. Where do you come down with heartbeat laws and, for that matter, abortion in general?
I think that when it comes to abortion, I am pro-life, but I've never been the one to tell a woman what to do. I think as a man, when you tell a woman what to do, you're always going to end up on the wrong side of the stick, the wrong side of the bed, or the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
But I would never.
That's wisdom talking right there, people.
I'm sorry. It's just the facts. And And you can never judge human nature. You know, regardless of how much we want to, regardless how much we try, we can pass bills and laws and things like that. But you can never judge human nature, because God gives every single person the ability to make their choice. And God is the person that you have to answer to, you know, once your time has expired here on earth. But I would never support or pass any legislation that requires the federal government to fund an abortion. I feel like if that is that woman's choice, then that woman needs to foot the entire bill herself.
So as we're getting close to wrapping up, how do folks get in touch with you if they want to make a campaign contribution?
Yes, you can go to my website. My website is joecollinsforcongress.com. It's all spelled out, joecollinsforcongress.com.
And any final thoughts you wish to share with the listeners? Anything you want to leave with the voters as we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. I like what you said earlier when the show first started. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And right now, we're in the time and a position where we're trying to solve 21st century problems with 20th century politicians. It's never going to work. The only thing that we're seeing right now is a repeat of the 1940s, the 1960s, and the early 1990s. If we want something different, we have to vote for something different. That means we cannot be scared of the unknown. We have to vote for politicians. We have to vote for men and women who want to get in office and actually make change. The politicians who have sat in office for a long time, their time has expired in office, and I think it's time for them to retire. But we got to be brave. Take a step out of faith and let's vote for something new.
Well, Joe, I wish you a lot of luck. I'm going to be watching your race, and please know you're welcome to come on Conservatives Guide anytime. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This has been an episode of The Conservative's Guide to American Politics. We hope you've gained new knowledge that helps you in your day-to-day struggle to navigate the minefield of liberal ideals. Please share this episode with your conservative friends and help them gain the strength needed to face the progressive assault against America. The stance we take today will determine our future and the future for our children. Like this podcast and help send a message to the progressives. Stand proud of your conservative ideology. Bring together your neighbors and look not for the shelter of silence. Speak your mind, exercise your right to free speech, or one day the idea of America might only be a note in history.